Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Nau mai, haere mai. I'm John McDonald. Kia ora and welcome into the Community Drive Hut Zone on Thursday the 31st of July, the last show of the month. The Hut Zone is Wellington Access Radio's weekly look into the stories, people, history, poems and music that make the Hutt Valley community. Tonight, we chat to Glenet Marching Club coach Cheryl Lovett, who is wanting new marching girls to join her long-established Upper Hutt Club, ready for the new marching season. We chat about the recruitment campaign and the positive connections that make marching a lot more than just another sports team. We start a 1980 history series from Hutt City Libraries. Part one is with Alice May Hill on life in an early Eastbourne. We hear a short story from this year's Upper Hutt Libraries short stories competition, Champion by Megan Schultz. And there's local music from Calculated Risk, Lady One and Only, and from Halcyon Drift, Easy Chair. So let's start things off with a poem from Upper Hutt by Liv Jacobs.
I'm Arlene Croft, and I'm reading a poem by Liv Jacobs. It came first in the 2023 Upper Hutt Libraries Poetry Competition Children's Section, and it's called My Best Friend. My best friend, I spend days laughing and smiling next to you. I spend all of my time away thinking about you. When we walk, I smile, hoping for this to never end. When you're scared, I hold you close, soothing you, keeping you safe. When we get to your haircut and you're scared, I talk to you, distract you until it's all done. When you're too excited to handle, we go to the park and run around, throwing a ball around. When I look at you, all I see is my best friend. Even if you're my furry friend, I still enjoy it. Enjoy life. Love you.
That was Arlene Croft reading My Best Friend by Liv Jacobs from the 2023 Upper Hutt Libraries Poetry Competition Children's Section. Time for the story of the week, and this was a finalist in the adult section of this year's Upper Hutt Libraries Short Story Competition. Champion by Megan Schultz, read by John MacDonald. Century. What? Say the word, child, I cannot help unless... Bang! The large double doors burst open. Soldiers spill into the atrium, swords drawn and armour gleaming. The boy freezes. The priestess calmly turns towards the new guests, tucking her hands into wide sleeves. For a moment, all is still. Heat radiates from the hearth behind the pair, the fires crackling, cutting whip-like through the quiet. Candles sprawl across the steps among small lumps of wax, tiny flames flickering in anticipation. Daylight floats in from a roof aperture high above the scene, and columns stand like silent stone sentries between the company and their mark. The boy is sure they hear his pounding heartbeat. The captain steps forward, expression dark, as he dips into a shallow bow. Apologies for the disruption, High Priestess, calmly, his voice booms. We're just here for the boy, then we'll be on our way. The boy merely stares, chest heaving. Guards before him, altar behind, he has nowhere to go, no one to save him. Priestess calmly pauses, calculating. He claims sanctuary, she declares. The guards hesitate, straightening as they look to their captain for direction. The boy echoes the motion. The captain narrows his eyes. I didn't hear it. Well, I did. She lifts her chin, which means you'll have to wait until he leaves. The captain's jaw tightens, but his tone remains diplomatic. We're here on the king's orders. The high priestess's brows rise, indignant. What is a king's word against a god's? She sweeps her arms out, smoothly descending a step. You'd have me disgrace Igni, the great protector, in his own hall? Sacrilege! I should report you to the chief priest. Now, there's no need for that, the captain says quickly, hands splayed. I'm sure we can work something out. There's nothing to work out, the priestess retorts. The boy has claimed sanctuary, and we're obligated to honour it regardless of his alleged crimes. Once he's off the grounds, you can have him, but he's protected here. She nods once in dismissal, tucking her hands back into her sleeves as she turns. Good day. The captain's expression sours. The king's displeasure would certainly land on his shoulders, but there was no argument to be made. The covenant of sanctuary was sacred. You can't hide in here forever, boy, he warns. You'll have to come out sooner or later, and when you do, we'll be waiting. With that, he turns and marches out, the guards following behind. Only once their echoing footsteps fade does the boy collapse onto a step and shudder a sigh. Thank you, he breathes. Priestess calmly eyes the door warily. Don't thank me yet. I've only delayed the inevitable. Her attention drifts to him. What's your name, boy? He hesitates. Alistair, High Priestess, he relents, gaze dropping. My friends call me Ali. The edge of her lip twitches up. Defender. Interesting. You may call me Sister, Carmelie, she says. Are you hungry? His stomach grumbles, as if on cue, he nods tentatively. The priestess dips her head. Good, let's get you cleaned up and fed. Then you can tell me how you got into such trouble with the palace guards. Alistair shakes his head adamantly. I don't, Sister Carmelie raises a hand. I'm not here to judge, and I certainly won't turn you away now, but I cannot help without the details. So just start from the beginning, and we'll go from there. Too tired to argue, the boy allows himself to be led through a door to the back rooms. A modest, almost cramped space meets him, with a small kitchen and a few chairs crowded around the table. The priestess ushers him towards the small washroom and begins preparing a simple broth at the stove. He returns looking brighter, though dread still clings to his young features. Alistair quietly takes a seat, keeping his hands politely clasped as his gaze drifts around. The High Priestess gathers meagre ingredients into the humble soup, and soon a salty tang fills the air. Finally, she puts a steaming bowl and a small hunk of bread before the boy and settles opposite him. When you're ready, she gestures. He swirls the spoon, hunger turned to nausea. I don't know what to tell you, he mumbles. I was working in my uncle's workshop like usual when they came. My aunt answered. She tried to stall, but they pushed past her. Guilt and shame pinch his brow. I didn't even try to fight. I panicked, slipped out the back and started running. His voice wavers. I didn't know where else to go. His eyes glisten. Guardians, I hope they're okay. He catches himself too late, cheeks reddening at the near blasphemy. Sister Carmelie ignores it. Are you a follower? She asks evenly. Alistair sniffs and scratches his chin. Not officially or anything. though I've always respected Igni, as I respect all the guardians, he adds quickly, gaze dropping again. But I just felt drawn here. Is that silly? She shakes her head gently. Not at all. Igni's hall is always open. A pause. How old are you, child? 16, sister. She tilts her head. When's your dedication ceremony? Week after next. Any inclination? He shrugs. I hadn't decided. He sits back and folds his arms, the food forgotten. Guess now I don't have to. It's a lot to ask at your age, choosing a lifelong affiliation, she affirms. His gaze lifts. Did you always want to be a priestess? Not always, Sister Carmelie admits. I was a little older than you, and studying medicine in the capital. I visited a temple one day and felt a strong presence, a pull I couldn't ignore. Pledged myself to Igni's service then and there, left everything else behind. She smiles softly. The guardians work in mysterious ways sometimes. A beat. Tell me more about your family. My parents are back in Fieldstream, farmers, Alistair says. I didn't take to it like my siblings, so they sent me to apprentice under my uncle. Are they affiliated? He tilts his head. Pa's Inba, Ma and my older brother are Terran. He shrugs again. We aren't super devout, honestly. We go to the temple on holidays, but that's about it. The edge of her lip curls. Earth and water, fitting, but no fire. The boy sits small and vulnerable before her, ordinary by every measure. Then something catches her eye, a glint of metal beneath his tunic. What's that around your neck? She asks. He blinks and pulls it out, thumbing the medallion. Just a trinket. I found it by the creek a few weeks ago and cleaned it up. Thought it was kind of cool. The priestess's eyes brighten. Ah, I see now why you were drawn here, she says knowingly. You're one of us. His gaze snaps up. I'm not a priest. Priestess calmly chuckles. No, no, nothing so simple, she says. That trinket, as you call it, is a guardian's mark. They're quite powerful with proper training. Alistair's eyes widen. Is this what they're after? He asks, dumbfounded at how such a small, simple thing could cause such trouble. They can have it. I'm afraid it's not so easy, child. The priestess shakes her head. Once it chooses a welder, they cannot be separated. Sister Carmela takes a breath, aware the boy's world is about to be irrevocably changed. Have you heard of the Guardian's Champions? Alistair nods slowly. My parents told me stories as a kid, but I thought they're all gone. There haven't been champions in many years, no, and through history they've been targeted for their power, Carmelie confirms. I'm a member of an order dedicated to protecting them, and it seems, my dear, that you've been selected. I don't understand these splutters. I'm just a kid, a blacksmith's apprentice. I'm not special, she finishes, and he nods again. Yes, we've had a few of those. His brows furrow. A pause. Are the others like me, he breathes. When the champions rise, they tend to be four, one for each guardian, she explains. We recently received word of Cullum's being found. They're travelling to a safe house for training as we speak. Carmelie stands. We'll need to leave tonight. I'll begin preparations immediately. Alistair darts up. I can't just go. Nor can you stay, she says firmly, and he flinches. Carmelie softens, placing a hand on his shoulders. Listen to me, child. If the king knows of your new power, others won't be far behind. My order is not alone in maintaining this knowledge, she explains, trying to balance urgency with care. I know this must all be frightening, but I need you to trust me. Alistair stares with wide eyes, all he was and all he could become colliding. The priestess's mouth forms a thin line. If the guardians are selecting champions again, something must be coming. Something big, she says grimly. And you may be the only ones who can stop it. I'm John McDonald, and you're in the Hut Zone on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And that was Champion by Megan Schultz, a finalist in the adult section of the 2025 Upper Hutt Libraries Short Story Competition. Time for some local history. In 1980, Hutt City Libraries completed four interviews with long-standing Hutt residents, the first one being with Alice May Hill about her life in Eastbourne.
The cobra was the little one that sort of, the Muirtide took people in and out to work, and the cobra would run in at midday when there weren't many people.
Were they very much houses? What were the houses like? Were they holiday houses or sort of, you know, temporary houses that were only used sometimes, or did people live over here permanently?
There were quite lots of people, you know, the Burdens were later away over the hill, but there were lots of people over here in those days. But I suppose there weren't many people all along this side of the road to Days Bay where I went, but that was a holiday home that I went to. It belonged to the Careys, the drapers, and they used to have it for the holidays and let it for the rest of the year. And I had been ill and wanted to go for a holiday, and we came over here and rented the house, you see, for the rest of the year. And we had to get out one Christmas and went for a holiday. And then the next year the Depression was on us, and Mr. Carey offered us the house because he had to buy his business premises at Petone. And of course we snapped it up. We'd managed to sell our place in town. Mm-hmm. And of course we've been here ever since.
And this is a Days Bay, and you said there was a Mr. Dick who virtually sort of ran Days Bay. Can you remember him?
Well, I remember Mr. Dick very well. And he ran the bay, and if anything was wrong, you rang Mr. Dick to get it put right. And I was told to sunbathe, and I went down the beach one day in my neck-to-knee bathing suit and a towel, and I pulled the garment down my back and lay on my tummy on the sand. And Mr. Dick came along and told me off and sent me home.
This was all a bit too much, was it, in those days, but a bare back?
Yes, to see a bare back. And the same thing happened to some boys that were doing the same sort of thing. The same thing happened to them, because I suppose he was a bit old-fashioned. But it's hard to believe now, isn't it?
Well, you said you used to come over here before you lived here at Days Bay in the 30s, that you used to come over as a young girl from Wellington when you still lived in Wellington. What did you used to do at the bay? Were you allowed to go in swimming then?
Oh, yes, we used to go in swimming. And there are lots of nice walks round the bay, you know. And when it was a crowd, you could find a nice sheltered place where it wasn't too crowded. But it's always been a favourite haunt of Wellingtonians, and people have come over here always, as long as I can remember. And we used to bring our visitors over when we had them, you see. And there used to be a dip thing, through the thing that they had during the exhibition. That was over here. While in the pond, you know the pond along by there?
Yes.
Well, there used to be a sort of slide thing.
That you slid down and went into the water?
Yes. But I can just remember that. But I think it got taken away in the end.
Were there always two wharves for the boats? Did the boats call at Days Bay and Eastbourne?
Yes, and sometimes if it was too rough for the Muratai to berth at Eastbourne, they would come round to Days Bay.
And everyone had to get off at Days Bay.
Yes, and I've seen them scuttling past my house and against this howling southerly, you know, trying to get home. The buses, of course, did come and take them afterwards sometimes, but there aren't always the buses.
Has there always been a fairly good road around the harbour to the bays?
Yes, there's always been a pretty good road. And it's been inhabited so long that they were Italian fishermen here, a lot of fishermen over here.
Were there?
The Delabarcas and the Mios are still here. Their families are still here. And they used to go out fishing a lot. And we used to be able to go down, they'd put out the nets and we used to be able to go down and buy fish off the net, off the beach sometimes. So, but those families are still here. The old Mr. Delbarker's gone, but you know, his descendants are all about here. But there was a big Italian colony here.
Can you remember what was on Soames Island in those early days? Did people ever go there?
Yes, I once went over there. It's a quarantine station and has always been that. And it's got little... Well, I used to be very interested in the barber class movement. And we had a... When I first came over here, I had the barber class around Eastbourne, and we got permission to go over there, and they have rows of them like the cabins of a ship, rows of little rooms. And the penguins used to squeal under them at night. We had a lovely time. And Eastbourne came on the Saturday. They brought the Eastbourne ferry over to bring all the Eastbourne people over, came in the mayor, and they wanted to get the right to come over there, you see. There's nothing much on the island itself to see, because a sort of road goes round it, but there's nothing to see. And then the Minister for Justice, he'd given us a position and he got his knuckles wrapped for letting anybody go over there, you see.
Because they're not allowed on it now as a quarantine station at all.
No, it's just for that, you see. Animals have to go there.
Edinburgh. Can you remember the political prisoners being there? It was a German internment camp during the First World War, wasn't it?
Yes. Mm. Yes, I do remember that. Mm. And they were probably in those little rooms, you see. Yes, I do remember that. And we had a sort of fence across the harbour entrance built thing during the war too.
Pack up your troubles in your own kit bag and smile, smile, smile. While you, the Lucifer, delight your fan, smile, boys, that's the style. What's the use of worrying? It never was worthwhile. Pack up your troubles in your own kit bag and smile, smile, smile.
I'm John MacDonald, and you're in the Hat Zone on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And that was the late Alice May Hill from her 1980 interview, courtesy of Hutt City Libraries. We hear another interview from that series next Thursday. Time for some local music before the feature interview. From Calculated Risk, here's Lady One and Only.
Said you'd never be a rich man, never have girls and wine. The money doesn't mean a thing as long as she stays mine. I'd like to buy one for all the days we spent together, by the way. Mother said I'd never be a rich man, but I've done mighty fine. 'Cause she's my lady, one and only. She ain't rich, but she ain't lonely, 'cause she found the time to drink my wine with me. All she wants to do is hold me. So take the vow, she made a vow with me. Ooh, baby, with me. Everybody knows that lady's dressed in silk and gold. She turns up in boots and rags, looking kind of old. But that don't mean a thing to me. I'm gonna go out, I can see. She's alright, hold me tight till we both grow old. 'Cause she's my lady, one and only. She ain't rich, but she ain't lonely. 'Cause she found the time to drink my wine with me. Oh, yes, she's my lady, one and only. All she wants to do is hold me. So take the vow, she made a vow with me.
And that was Lady One and Only from Calculated Risk. Okay, time for our feature story of the week. There's active recruitment underway with one of the long-established girls' marching clubs in the region, Upper Hutt's Glenette Marching Club. As a new marching season steps off, I thought it was timely to contact the club and hear about their recruitment campaign.
My name's Cheryl, and I am one of the coaches of the Glenette Marching Club. We have all ages covered. At the moment, we're recruiting for 4 to 7-year-olds, which is our open free choice grade, our under 13 grade, which is our 7 to 13-year-olds, Then we have juniors, which is 13 to 18, or year 13 at school. And then seniors, which is year 13 or 18 and above.
Okay, so it's the whole, all age groups. So the average I saw was, I think, 17.
Yep, so the edu would have seen was for our senior team, which is right. 17 years of age plus. But in Glenet, we do cover, we're a club, so we do cover all age groups. So there was also some recruitment done a little bit earlier in the month for the other age groups.
Right. So what sort of skills are you looking for potential marchers?
No skills.
Okay.
So we are happy to coach anybody who's willing to learn. It's a sport, basically, if you can walk, then we can go from there. So anyone that can put one foot in front of the other is capable of marching. So we start young. So we recruit for our 4 to 7 year olds. We teach them the basics of marching and more about the teamwork and having a bit of fun. And then when we get to our under 13 grade, it becomes a little bit more competitive and the team travels to North Island and New Zealand Championships. And then our under 18 team and our senior team are competitive as well. But we're happy to train anybody. So anybody that's willing to learn, we're happy to train. There are some teams who take experienced girls only who have done it sort of from an earlier age, but we've got coaches in our club who are very skilled and very happy to spend additional time teaching brand new people.
So what's involved in being a marcher? What sort of rehearsals, sort of commitments are you looking for?
So at the beginning, we train once a week, usually for 2 to 3 hours. As we get closer to the competitive season, so that's normally October, depending on how routines are going and how the girls' learning's going, then we tend to maybe up our trainings to twice a week. And we stay at that right through till our North Island Champs, which will happen usually the first or second weekend in December. We may have an extra training in the school holidays or with work commitments where we can fit it in, where we may do a full day's training, where the girls just, you know, can hone in on their skills a bit more, do some time in front of mirrors to perfect routines. And then after Christmas, when we come back, then we intensify a little bit more and we'll do a solid, you know, 2 trainings a week with local competitions. If there's no local competitions in the weekend, we may see if there's availability for the girls to come together and train maybe a Saturday and a Sunday, depending on how we're going. And then, yeah, coming up to nationals, nationals run from Thursday afternoon to Saturday evening. We tend to travel 2 days prior so that when we get to the venue, we'll train Tuesday afternoon and then all day on a Wednesday to get ourselves ready, and then we start our competition on the Thursday afternoon.
So what sort of equipment or uniforms are needed?
Well, that's the joy of marching. The club provide. The club is, it's one sport where the club provide basically everything. For Glenet themselves, we provide everything for our teams. That goes right down to competition boots, training gear. The competition uniform is all provided. We just ask that the members, you know, look after their training gear and keep them at a good state. Our competition uniforms are looked after by chaperones of the team. So each week, once the girls have worn them, the chaperones of the team take the competition uniforms home. They wash them, press them, and get them ready for the next competition.
How big is each team?
For a technical team, you need 10 people for that, for competitive reasons. In the display phase, you can have up to 14. So we normally have anywhere from 10 to 16 members in a team.
What's the difference between display versus technical?
So technical is what we call technical drill. It's a routine that is provided to us from Marching New Zealand. Every team does the same routine.
Right.
And so that's how you're judged as to who's basically doing that routine the best. And it looks at things like footwork, so how the girls point their toes when they're marking time, how they pivot their feet when they're doing turns, etc. So that's all the technicalities of marching. The display phase, which is more of a freestyle where teams make up their own choreographed routines to music of their choice, and they perform that. So every team does something different, and that can be anything from more of a military display to something that can be quite dancey. A lot of people compare us to cheerleaders. We don't tend to flip or do sort of any acrobatics as such, but we do quite a bit of more of a dancing routine as such. And the girls tend to really enjoy that side of it because it's their own creativity that they get to put out on the field.
Now, I've been watching a few video clips, and it looks like the audience really sort of get excited at some of these display sections as well in the competitions.
Oh, totally. The display phase is definitely the crowd pleaser. It's when the girls can put their own little taste of marching into what they're doing. And it's, you know, different music. It's not the military band style. You know, especially for the little ones, it's something that they can be quite creative with. Music from, you know, today, or some of the teams go back and, you know, have music from the 60s or 70s. And it's just how they perform it, and definitely things that the crowd get into a lot more.
Greenwich, by the centre, quick march.
How old is the Glenette Marching Club?
We've been around for over 50 years now. I haven't personally shaken the team for that long. I started marching when I was 6 for a team called Kensington Guards, who were based in the Hutt Valley. Glenette were around at that point then, and I went through all the age groups of what we used to be called was midgets, juniors and seniors, which obviously with changing in the times and being politically correct now, we're now under 13s, under 18s and seniors. So I did all my years with a team called Kensington Guards. And when I was 18, I took up coaching myself, and I was lucky enough at that point to be offered a role with Glenette. So I transferred over to them. They were an Upper Hutt-based team at the time. And, yeah, I started coaching their little under-13 team when I was 18. And, yeah, I've been involved with Glenette now for 30-odd years. So, there you go. You can do the maths on that one. You know how old I am. But, yeah, so I've been with Glenette for 30 years. Obviously, when I first started coaching, the sport was big. Like, we had probably 3 or 4 teams in Upper Hutt alone. Now, unfortunately, over all the years, the sport has definitely diminished quite a bit. And now we just have the one under-13 team in the whole Wellington region, which is really sad. But we have managed to weather the storm and put a team out each season so far. We're one of New Zealand's top performing teams, which is quite exciting to be able to say, with the under-13 team being placed in the top 6 in New Zealand for the last 20-odd years.
How many girls have you got in Glenette at the moment?
At the moment, we're just coming back into our new season with us finishing at the end of March from Nationals last year. So we would have had, I think we had 52 members of Glenette. Yeah.
Where does the name Glenette come from, do you know?
The history behind it is when the team first started, there was a coach who really liked the team. I think they were called Glen Harbour or Glen something. And so they took the beginning of that name, and that one of the women that started the club, her name was Jeanette. So they combined the two and it became Glenette.
Okay, well, that's nice. Whereabouts is it centred today? Is it still Upper Hutt?
We train in Upper Hutt at the moment. We're actually very lucky. We have contacts through the New Zealand Army, and we train up at the Army camp in Trentham, and we have access to the parade ground and the gym up there when it's raining. So we're extremely fortunate to be able to get those grounds and have that support. Yes, we train in Trentham. For most teams, they train, you know, where they can and get training grounds that are big enough to be able to do the routines at a reasonable cost. It's quite hard to find grounds that, you know, you can go into twice a week sometimes and be able to have access to toilets, etc. for the kids. So, yeah, we're extremely lucky that we have that agreement with the New Zealand Army camp at the moment.
Yeah, it sounds a very good setup, yeah. What sort of area do the girls come from? Are they tend to be Upper Hutt or do they come further afield?
No, actually, they come from all over Wellington. We have girls who live in Miramar. We have girls who are in Newlands, Johnsonville. A number of girls come from the Porirua region and then all over the Hutt Valley, right through to, we have some members who travel over from Wainui. Yeah, so we're sort of a Wellington base now. We come from, you know, the whole region.
Is that because of the track record's been so good and the name Glenet brings them coming, does it?
Yeah, it does in some respects. Yes, like we've even had girls that have travelled from Napier or Palmerston North who have marched in our senior team. It also comes down to the fact that it's just not a sport that was as popular as it has been in the past, so it's availability, really.
Right.
We're lucky in Wellington we have another top team who currently are competing called Swiss. They compete in the Wellington region and they train over in Newlands at the moment. And they do also have a number of girls there in the senior grade who travel from all over New Zealand to march for them.
I remember the Lochiel marching girls. I mean, they were just international names from the Hutt, weren't they?
Oh, totally, yes. Yes, they were. I was lucky enough to be able to go and march with them and do a tattoo over in Norway, actually. So,
Cranky.
Yeah, they set the standard for all of marching. And a number of those girls still involved in the sport. When Lochiel finished competitive marching, they had a little break and then they brought a team out under the competitive name of Storm. Unfortunately, their coach passed away a few years ago, but a lot of those girls continued on. And yeah, they are also now marching in the team that I mentioned earlier, which is Swiss.
What's been some of the highlights of marching in your time that you can sort of tell us about?
Oh, I definitely think it's the friendships. It's like a family. It's an extended family. I've got four children of my own now, and all four of my children have been brought up with marching. My two older children are both my girls. They've both stepped in and marched as well, and they've marched since basically they were born, with one being at her first training at 5 days of age because we had nationals coming up. It's just having people around. Girls that I've coached that were 7, 8 years old, I still see them now and they've got children of their own. Everyone keeps in touch. It's just, yeah, it's a real extended family and it's not just about the sport. It's supporting them through other things as well. I know with our own team with Glenet, we've had the odd netball team in the off-season. The girls have wanted to stay together and do something and not just finish marching and wait for the next season to start. So they were all interested in netball. So we've had netball teams that have competed over in the Hutt Valley at the Taita Courts there. And we've even competed over in Porirua as well. So it's not just about going there, doing what you do and going home. You create a real family sense with it. And the girls grow with one another. Like, once they're in the sport, they tend to stay. And they stay for a long time. So a lot of these girls have grown up together. They go off to university and they're still together and they support one another.
And it sounds like there's a lot of touring that they do together as well.
Yeah, we do. We travel for North Island Champs, which anywhere throughout the North Island. In December this year, they'll be travelling to New Plymouth, where the competition is being held. And then we go off to the Nationals, which last season we were in Invercargill, you know, travelling down there. We've been to Queenstown, Dunedin, Christchurch, all the main centres. This year, we're lucky enough that the Nationals are actually held in Porirua this year. It's set up for her arena. So that's in March of 2026. You'll get an influx of marching teams into the region. So that's really cool for us, for the girls to be able to perform locally and in front of their own friends and families.
And it sounds like you've obviously done some overseas trips in your time marching as well.
Yeah, we have. I was lucky enough to go overseas with Lochiel. But in the past 4 years, Marching New Zealand have come up with an initiative with Drill Dance Australia. And we've been doing some what we call as tattoos that they've put on. So Glynette travelled to the Gold Coast 3 years ago now, two, 3 years ago. And we took part in the first international tattoo over there with our Australian counterparts. And then last year, the tattoo was in Wellington.
Your other hut connections, Cheryl, because it sounds like you've been in the hut a long time.
Yes, definitely. I grew up in Stokes Valley, and so that's where I started marching at the local team, Kensington Guards, there. And then, yeah, went through and just sort of up the road slightly to Upper Hutt, whereas when I joined Glynette.
So the best place for people to get information and to apply, where's that?
So you can go onto Facebook. We have a Facebook page, which is just Glynette, G-L-E-N-N-E-T-T-E. So if you do a search on Glynette, you'll find the Glynette Marching Team there. Marching New Zealand have a website, so marching.co.nz. They also have contact details for Marching Wellington, and you can get in touch with us through them as well. If you look up on a website, yeah, and if you just Google Glynette, it'll give up contact details. My phone number will be up there, or otherwise there's an email address and people can get in contact anytime.
So the next event that the team is aiming at, what's the next for them?
So at the moment, we're just currently recruiting, training, teaching new people how to march. And our first opening day, or our field day, which is with other Wellington teams, is at the end of October.
So finally, Cheryl, your message to Hut Zone Radio listeners on maybe coming to check out marching, what would that message be?
Oh, it's give it a go. If you've ever, I know that there's a lot of people that have been involved in marching over the years or have said, oh, I always wanted to be a marching girl, give it a go. It's a great sport for kids. It keeps them occupied, which I believe all teenagers need to be, and it just creates a real sense of pride, teamwork, unity. If you want to do it, give it a go. It's a great sport.
Thank you, Glynette.
And that was Cheryl Lovett from the Glynette Marching Club, based in Trentham, and recruiting marching girls of all ages to join their club for what sounds a very positive and fun experience. But sadly, that means it's the end of this week's show. Thanks to all my guests tonight, and a big thank you to you for listening to the show and supporting Wellington Access Radio. You can always listen again to the show as a podcast on the Hut Zone pages of accessradio.org.nz. If you have a suggestion of a hut story or a piece of music or poetry, then please do message us, either on Facebook, John McDonald NZ, or email the team, and our email is thehutzone@outlook.co.nz. Let's go out with some more local music, this time from Halcyon Drift. Here's Easy Chair. Mate wa e noho oru mai ra. Stay well.
She may come to haunt us, defying sense to talk.
program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.